only have a clean report. And a clean report. Possible also if you move with your area. If you can also try to touch on the implementation of the resolution of the export in Daba. And what are the issues there? And I surely members also the point that was raised earlier on of imminent persons. I think we should invite them sometime to appear before the committee and have a discussion with them. I think it's a very important team to meet with the committee just to have a discussion. Because I think that in very serious issues of transformation and development in our sport, then engaging with us will also enrich our own understanding of the political sport. And Mackenzie, I know that you know that sport is very important. It's very important. Director General, who can take us through?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Sport. Allow me to take you through the presentation on our annual report for the financial year 2011-2012. The report would look at the various issues of implementation and would also give the rationale for some of the inherent weaknesses in terms of the processes of the department and in delivering on the mandate of the department in terms of the Constitution as well as the Sport and Recreation Act and the various other pieces of legislation that address us to deliver on this mandate. Consequently, we would also highlight the challenges that are there as well as our recommendations in terms of the process forward. Chair, I'm not so sure whether by next year we would achieve a totally clean audit, but we are convinced that by 2014-2015 financial year, we would have zero queries. But for now, there are some of the key things that require further reengineering of our processes to help us succeed. As you are aware, the main responsibility of our work is around the development of national policies as well as guidelines for sport and recreation. This mandate is a mandate that often puts us at crossroads with communities as well as various stakeholders, because the anticipation is that we have all the power and all the resources to do what we need to do, but I'm sure the committee is aware that this is a shared mandate with provinces. And there are also certain key things, particularly around facilities, which the bulk of them are owned by municipalities and to which we really have no say or not much. And our job is to ensure that these guidelines are there as well as the policies are there and that they are implemented. The key implementers for us remain provinces and to a little extent municipalities. And we also utilize SASCOC and national federations. And we also have third parties, including agencies like Love Life and Sport Eurostrust. We have other agencies such as Show Me Your Number and so on, various small NGOs that we also implement some of the things through. So despite the delivery of sport and recreation being done by the three spheres, we attempt to ensure that the actions, initiatives, and the mandate is well integrated and coordinated to achieve maximum impact. The challenge with this has been that previously we never had a common plan within which all the three spheres could cohere around. And hence we had a national sport and recreation endeavor in November last year with a view of producing South Africa's first plan for us to be able to cohere and work towards common objectives in the three spheres. Again, we administer two public entities, Boxing South Africa, as well as the South African Institute of Drug-Free Sport. We are the first ones, Chair and members, to admit that Boxing South Africa isn't what it should be. And I think that acknowledgement stems from the fact that we have seen what is happening with the administration of boxing, and we have subsequently began introducing several measures. While boxing remains what it should not be, but our work since November last year till March this year to try and help them turn around the situation has ensured that they slightly move from a disclaimer to a qualified audit opinion. While this is nothing to really celebrate because a qualified audit opinion is still not the ideal scenario they should be in, but I think it indicates the effort we have put in the last 4 months to ensure that the bulk of the weaknesses inherent in the administration of boxing are addressed. Part of this work involved our secondment of one of our senior managers to go work in the administration of boxing for a period of 3 months. We have now received a full appraisal report from our colleague who has made several recommendations, which some of them we have begun implementation right away to try and help boxing turn around. We have also expanded our internship program to Boxing South Africa to temporarily address their weaknesses in certain key areas. We are reviewing the entire regulations of the Boxing Act to do away with some practices, including the provincial coordinator system, which is largely responsible for the challenges with collection of money and the registration of boxers in provinces and so on. So while we are totally overhauling the entire Boxing South Africa administration and the systems, we are having inherent difficulties. My belief as accounting officer is that the baseline of Boxing South Africa is inherently wrong. It is totally inadequate for the mandate that this entity has got to undertake. And I think with such a baseline, we are virtually setting them up for failure. For 3 financial years now, they always come end in cap at the end of the financial year. Just for us to inject more resources into them to help them just stay afloat. When we started with this work in November, Boxing South Africa, the Auditor General had said that as a going concern, it was on a risky slope, and its debts were 6 times what it had. We are glad to announce right now that while they are still administratively weak, but the issue of a going concern has been significantly addressed. They have paid all their major debts. They have paid everything that they owed. One of the key things that we had to do was to assist them with accounting policies as well as the generalization of the entries to balance out their books. Right now they are in a healthy, positive state, save for the fact that it is still badly managed. I think this is the key thing from a financial point of view that we seek to do. And the sustainability of boxing in our country does not lie with only good management and good governance. It also lies with a steady revenue stream. And this they can only achieve because the bulk of the money in boxing today doesn't come from sponsorships as in the previous days. It comes from broadcasting rights. And we have approached the two major broadcasters of sport in our country, both the SABC as well as SuperSport. SABC has already signed with Boxing South Africa to ensure that all the rights to fight first with Boxing South Africa. So promoters who require to stage a fight would have to seek a sanctioning license from BSA as the law requires, and would also have to ensure that if the fight is televised, the broadcaster would not pay the promoter, and the promoter has to declare, as is the situation now. What needs to happen is that the broadcaster pays Boxing South Africa, and Boxing South Africa keeps what belongs to it and gives the rest to the. That will ensure that all promoters now pay, and because now the rights vest with Boxing South Africa, the clause of confidentiality between promoters and broadcasters no longer applies. And the fact that some promoters have been under-declaring what really is the value of their, and thereby robbing not just BSA, but also the the boxers themselves, because if the broadcasting rights are worth 8 million and you declare that they are worth 3, and Boxing South Africa works on the basis of that declaration, it means that the purse of the boxer, as well as the pension of the boxer and everything, is calculated on the basis of this 3 million. And the promoter gets to pocket 7 million all in all. So we have insisted, despite the outcry of the promoters, we have insisted that this be the new system that we are pursuing. And SuperSport is almost on the verge of signing. They have had a challenge that they had already pre-committed themselves to one promoter. They had to stage only fights for one promoter, and that was it. So we are now saying that all the rights must rest with BSA, and they have been negotiating their way out of that specific agreement. And so we believe that this will be the steady flow of income for the future of boxing in South Africa. And if we do enforce much more the ability of them to collect revenue, as well as to help them collect registration fees for boxers, then it will help a long way in addressing their long-term viability and sustainability. With the South African Institute of Drug Free Sport, this is the institute which is well run, better managed. We believe that with a little push like we are giving now and a bit of pressure, they will be the first public entity by next year, by the 2013 financial year. They would certainly achieve a clean audit. So that's what we are working with on. I think for them the key issue was how to record the information, the performance information around testing, which is always a bit of a challenge. So we are trying to help them streamline their policies in terms of reporting, because right now they only consider a test and report on it as valid if there has not been contestations on the test and if the tribunal didn't see them. These cases tend to sit like for 6 months. So often the period between the end of the financial year and where they are leaves a duality and hanging period, and which says that their performance information is not properly recorded. And the Auditor General hasn't raised this matter with us. We began attending to it. We believe that we must not only record on conclusion of the process, but we must also pre-record what we have already undertaken, the tests that have already been done. Whether they are positive or they are negative, or whether there's contestation, that should not be the case. So if we streamline the reporting requirements in that way, I think we'll address 80% of their key issues, which makes them not be able to get a clean audit. The department is led by the minister and the deputy minister, as you are aware, as well as the director general. Under the period under review, the department administratively had two DGs. Sumaya Khan, the COO, was acting, and the current DG commenced work on the 1st of November 2011. The vision and mission of the department remains relevant. They have been reaffirmed by the Sport Indaba, and of key issue is the duality of the mandate of an active nation as well as a winning nation. We have not really as a country done extremely well in terms of an active nation, which we have pursued largely the mass participation program on a single entry point of Siyadlala. I'm sure you would be aware about the Siyadlala program. And the bulk of our quota on TV had been to show the Siyadlala program in respect of MPP, but the mass participation program remains quite important. What we have sought to do was to expand it and to also vigorously introduce a recreation program, an active recreation program in respect of this. As it relates to the winning nation program, we have also begun good work on the instruction of the minister to work around this. Part of this work was on addressing the gap that existed in our sport system. Basically, our sport system worked in this manner. Schools that can run programs must run. atlas that can emerge on their own must emerge. And then there is a huge gap between those athletes who turn amateur before they turn professional and who play competitively on their own. There were no mechanisms to really support those athletes. SASCOC says we take you as a professional player if you are ranked number 8 in the world, or if you are a team, you are ranking well, rankings must be number 8. And only then you are entitled to enter the OPEX program, by which we start giving you more money to then become better. But how you transcend from being an amateur to being a professional, no one really covered that period. And how young stars had to emerge from grassroots levels and development programs and feed into amateur structures and from amateur to this was virtually non-existent. The Sporting Dava adopted the idea of creation of regional academies and regional sports hubs, as well as the provincial academies to be expanded to support largely the amateur athletes and help them turn professional. And the high performance centers that exist right now will continue to service the elite athletes. So this model, we have now finalized the first concept paper, which we will be debating with SASCOC next month to find synergy to it in this regard. Chair, we are a department consisting of an establishment of 210 funded posts, including two political office bearers. Currently, we have 174 filled posts and 36 vacancies. We have advertised 2 weeks ago. We will be filling further vacancies. We have had a huge attrition, normal attrition in the department of staff members that has been transferred to a number of departments. You would also see that we have dismissed one. We have had 5 resignations. The resignations, all of them under the period under review, came as a consequence of investigations, and most of the employees resigned when they have been charged. And we have went ahead and reported the cases with the police, because once an employee resigns when he's under investigation, we can no longer charge that employee because it doesn't belong to us. And typically most departments leave the matter at that. So we had gone ahead and opened the criminal cases for police to pursue the matters and to investigate them further in this regard. We have also had trust transfers to other government departments. And so we have contracted the interns on an internship program to help them bridge the gap between experiential learning as well as theory at universities. Again, we have appointed the full complement of the ministerial advisors, one responsible for federations and the other responsible for other key programs of the department. The budget allocated to us for the previous financial year was 820 million. As you are aware, half of this goes to provinces as a conditional grant, and a quarter from there then goes on to federations as a transfer. And in that transfer, the bulk goes to Love Life. We had a fight, let me put it that way, as a fight, because it was not very pleasant, between us and the Treasury over the same matter. We are of the opinion that the department can be used as a conduit and as a platform on which we are an ATM of type of scenario, where we are a conveyor belt for money from the Treasury to Love Life, because Treasury can't give by law Love Life money directly. It needs a conduit to give it through, and it uses us as that conduit, and we somehow do not have a say over how this money must then be utilized. We felt that this was incorrect, and we, having had debates with the Treasury and it was not getting anywhere, and after consultation with the Minister, it was then agreed that we offer Treasury to surrender back the money to them. If they want to give it to Love Life, they must give it to it directly and not via us, unless we are allowed to have a say in terms of how the money must be used. Ultimately, after a stalemate, we refused to transfer the money. So for for two quarters we didn't transfer any cent, and consequently Treasury then came back to say, okay, we should call Love Life and then tell Love Life what you want, and then they must do what you want. And we then on that basis began negotiations with Love Life, which now culminated into a new business plan, which is now aligned to our priorities and school sport and the youth camps and everything that we want to see them doing for sports, and not just HIV and AIDS. We accept the responsibility of sport in the fight against the scourge of AIDS, but we also believe that sport as a catalyst for social change, the basis must be sport, and must be sport development that assists in the fight against the scourge on HIV AIDS, because we couldn't have a scenario where the money that is set to be under the name of sport only pays for condoms and only pays for t-shirts and cans and all those things without necessarily doing anything significantly for sport. So it was on that basis that Love Life has now agreed that while it will not continue with the Love Life Games, but it will have to join an active recreation program that we are undertaking, and they would have to play a specific role. And so what we are currently doing is cost substitution, which what we should have paid for in terms of life skills and all those type of things for sports persons. Love Life will have to pay for those things and do them itself and deliver an aligned program in this regard. So basically that's that, and I think that now addresses one of the key long-standing issues that has been a bigger fight between us and them. And we have also promised Love Life that just to be on the safe side, these programs, you must no longer sign one-year agreements. You must sign multi-year agreements of about 3 years, because government also requires us to plan in three-year cycles. And the argument that said the Love Life money was not really our money doesn't hold water anymore, because the money from the Kellogg and the Ford Foundation ran dry two financial years ago. What now is being given is money from the national fiscus, and that's treasury money, and therefore we demand to have a bigger say in how it is used. I'm sure members are familiar with what we have done in school sport program. We have come to the committee to brief the committee twice already on the school sport program, and we have made tremendous progress, and the minister has already spoken about the school sport Olympics. In short, there would be 11 codes being played for this Olympics. We have 16 chosen federations for school sport that we have affirmed. Some of them, Chair, are not as ready as they should be to be able to deliver this. Some of these chosen federations, their footprint is so small that they do not have the capacity to work with us across all the provinces. We have decided to prioritize on the so-called the Big Five, netball, football, cricket, rugby, and athletics, and ensure that this is where we start the biggest. So while other federations, other six federations in addition to the Big Five will also be at the first school sport Olympics, in short, the bulk of the athletes will come from these five categories. And we have also taken cognizance in deciding on the 16, those specific federations that also provide modified sports for disabled athletes. And to this extent, we are proud to announce that three federations for this year's school sport Olympics would also stage for disabled athletes. This will total on average about 600 athletes who are disabled who would play in this Olympics. Again, we are quite committed to ensuring gender representativity in terms of the school sport program, and in selecting this we also prioritize and not just football, but also women football to be part of the codes that get played. While we call the code one football, but we know that there's more than one aspect of it being played in this regard. So as the same as hockey, where you have both. However, hockey is not part of this year's Olympics, but we believe that in the future years it will come into stream. Just as numbers, this year we invited schools Out of the 24,000 or so schools, public schools, we invited them to register on the database to declare the intention to play school sport. As we sit right now, we've got more than 13,000 schools that have registered for the school sport league for this year. And out of that, we have had about 7,000 that played actively in the league this year, which culminated in many codes in provincial competitions. Seven of the nine provinces have finished their provincials and they are ready, their teams are ready. Two more are finalizing their competitions. I think in, like for instance, if you take the Northwest, they are ready in nine codes. They still have to finalize just two, and after which their teams would come. All provinces at the previous outcome have declared that the money we have allocated for them in the conditional grant for school sport is available to be utilized to support the teams and to deliver the teams to the school sport Olympics. And however, the base costs of these Olympics are covered by the national department, and they will take place from the University of Pretoria from the 10th until the 14th of December, on which this will happen. So this program has never been attempted on this massive scale. It has never been done like this, even during the days of apartheid, where there were some formats of leagues, but they have never been this big. This is the first time we're attempting this on this large scale. We have learned a lot. Not everything will be as perfect as we want. We don't have enough officials. We don't have enough technical officials who are still accrediting referees. We have taken a painful decision to fix a flying plane, you know, and we had requested as the administration from the minister to say, we're requesting 2 years to put in the league in place. And the political directive was no, start now. And so we have had to have a dual task team, one that is preparing for the actual Olympics this year and the one that is also still working on the building blocks for the future years. So we don't have a perfect system, I must say, but I think we'll learn a lot from this year's Olympics and our commitment to bring the entire 24,000 schools by year three, which is the 2015-2016 financial year. We hope that we'll have all the 24,000 schools in stream and all of them playing the leagues for the country. There's still one small matter which we have not resolved, and this is the matter of the independent schools and private schools. These schools play their own independent league, and they have been doing so for years. In fact, most of the champions in rugby and cricket come from these schools. So consequently, we did not want to disrupt the only system that works well in the country. And so we have decided with the Independent Schools Association to say we will postpone the integration of their league system into our league system by 3 years. So we want to see first how our league works, and if it is robust enough, we will only at that time bring in what works and merge them into one super league. But also, the other reason is that if you have a Magurung High School that has not played anything for the past 18 years, and now you want them to play a league with Grey College or St. Albans and so on, it's unfair competition. It's just slaughter of the innocent, you know. So we then took a conscious decision to keep them apart for some time. And we will, however, in due course, match the two leagues to become one super league.
Separate but equal,
yes. But it's the only time I agree with the police. Chair, we have finalized on the coaching framework. SASCOC has already begun work. I think this far we have trained about 2,700 teachers in three codes. We still need to do much more than this. We had requested an amount of 880 million for year one from the Treasury to deliver on the sports plan and on the new imperatives. We got zero. In fact, we were told that our budget is going to be cut by 1% next financial year, and by 2% the year after, and by 3% the outer year. So our budget is not increasing, it's being cut down. So as is, my mandate has become even much more difficult because the minister says find the money. So we have been having an active, vigorous program of enticing the private sector into financing the bulk of what we have to do. And our expansion plans and our restructuring plans as a department to respond to the new mandate have been temporarily halted because with no money we can't expand, we can't do what we're expected to do in terms of the new thing. What is said, Chair and members, is that I've seen many protests by communities demanding services and service delivery. I'm yet to see one where communities are demanding sports facilities and they are demanding that children play sport in schools and so on. That doesn't come and no one seems to care. It's the only voice crying for this is the departmental voice. And we happen to be, should I say this, yes, but a stepchild of government. We are not in culture. Each time there has to be a cut in the budget, the cut is always first with us in culture, sport and recreation. We are the first ones to be told that we must hold back and we must cut back. There seem to be no one eager to fight for us. And you as representatives of people and constituencies, we hope that you would fight with us side by side in demanding much more for what is due to our children. I think we have to compare ourselves with the best. In the UK, the Minister of Sport there, UK Sport, was fired when we were at the Olympics. And the reason for that was that they had attempted to cut the budget of sport due to economic downturn. And the parents stood up and fought and said, what do you want us to do with our children when they come out of school? You want to turn our children into becoming criminals? And the parents, not the department, parents fought. And when the parents fought for that, that budget was left untouched. Other departments there in the UK experienced budget cuts, but not the Department of Sport. And it is that type of dynamic partnership that we require, and US representatives of the people should support us with in terms of delivering on this. So as is now, we have reached an agreement with the CAT CETA to expand to three other codes on the coaching framework. So we're hoping that by 2013, we'd have trained about 10,000 teachers as coaches. That's still a far cry if you consider that we've got 13,000 schools registered on the database. And these are teachers who voluntarily, without any technical know-how or expertise, who come forward and say, my team will play and I'll volunteer and I'll coach it. But it doesn't mean that they're good coaches or they know what they're doing. But it simply shows the effort. And if you consider that some schools have registered like for five codes on the league system, it means that they need at least five of their teachers trained in the different aspects. And we are only looking at training with the available resources, just 10,000 teachers, which is a far cry from the actual need and what we need to be doing at this stage. We have also reviewed our support for research in our country. Sport research has been quite meager and quite disappointing. And we have re-engineered the methodology of the SASRICON, the South African Sport and Recreation Conference, which attracts academics in the field of sport and leading personalities. We have expanded it to include practitioners as well as other people with a view of encouraging master's and PhD research in this and in affording a platform for us at an academic level to commission papers to be presented on various topics in sport and in improving on the knowledge and the depth of sport. Gone are the days where we should be unguided in what we do. I think everything we do must be scientifically guided if we are to make any significant impact. To this extent, we have not yet launched this program, but we can brief the committee for now. We and the CAT CETA are putting 6 million rands aside for the 2013 academic year with a view of attracting about 20 students in master's and PhD research in sport. We developed a basket of 40 topics, we and the CAT CETA, which students can choose from to do research on those specific topics. They still have to comply with the rules of the assignates and the universities, and they must still pass, but the copyright is shared between us and the for participating universities in this scheme. And to this extent, we hope it will be the first, we will carry on with this program for at least the next 20 years to make sure that we deepen the knowledge and understanding in sports science. We hosted the Golden Games. These were hosted in 2011 on the 20th and 21st of October. The Free State was the host. This year's host is the Northwest, and the games are taking place this coming week. We also had the Indigenous Games Festival from 23 until the 25th of March at the Swan Event Center. 8 of the 9 provinces except the Northern Cape participated in these games. And we have broadened this festival. We have basically repositioned it, because what we found as a festival is not really a festival. It's just some mediocre competition that was there and which people just played and no spectators and nothing. And the idea was that we want to preserve these games and to preserve heritage and the culture of African people in terms of the games. If we're indeed serious about that, we need to have genuine investment into these games. They mustn't be a sideshow. Otherwise, we must do away with them and say, let's focus purely on sport. But if indeed we are genuine that we want to preserve the legacy and the heritage these games present as an opportunity for us, then we've got to be very, very serious about it. And we have set aside the amount of 3 million rands for 2013 games in September. And we have repositioned this as a family festival, coupled with a carnival and every other thing. We have already partnered with the Tshwane Metropolitan Municipality, where we have agreed that we'll keep these games in Tshwane for 3 years because they are contributing to the budget. And we would seek to grow these games significantly. And we want, for the first time, these games to have a prize money, the athletes to be properly profiled. For the first time this year, they were on TV. So we would want them to be also live on SuperSport next year. And we want to also grow the prize money as well as the prizes. We want the overall winner to receive a car. You know, that's how serious we are. And we want these players who play these games to be as fashionable as Lucas Khader, as Dr. Kumal, as Jos van der Westhuizen, and Makan Dean, and so on. If we can bring this to that level, children will find the reason why they need to play these games and why their sustainability must continue. If we continue to play them as these mediocre games and so on, they will fizzle out and collapse, and it will cost us even much more money to do this. So we, like I said, we have repositioned it as a family festival. Most of yourselves members, as children, you have played these games, but your children now are not playing these games. These games are competing with PlayStations and the Wii and what. But if we bring the fathers and the mothers as well as the children to the games and we distribute free board games and free murawarawa sets and so on, you can play with them in a picnic type of setup, and they can watch their imagined sports heroes also play competitively as such. And I think this is our concept for next year. And forgive us for spending a lot of money on this. We have to, because we must grow these games to a significant portfolio to the extent that they would in future attract private sector sponsors and finance themselves. But no one will believe in this product unless we invest in it ourselves initially. Minister spoke briefly about the National Sports Volunteer Corps, and this I'll link it with the issue of Jake Matlala. We have launched the National Sports Volunteer Corps program. Again, with the pleasure of the minister, we launched it in February when we were saying we are not ready to. We know what we want to do, but the systems are not in place, and yet we launched it. But now we are almost ready. We have not yet begun marketing the program, but we have developed an electronic system that is web-based for people to be able to register with ease and to know, and for us to be able to know and to be able to deploy these volunteers. This targets former coaches, former players, former legends, and so on to come on board. This is not a job. It's a volunteer program. We will, however, service the volunteer program. Transnet has a similar program, and we have agreed to collaborate on this program, where Transnet will be able to present, like what Adidas does with the sports legends, and it pays Lucas to do a guest appearance and to do a coaching clinic and so on. Transnet will do the same for this sports legends to work with schools. Our key priority focus now is school sport as well as club system of the country. And so right now, even before we have started the marketing process, about 130 of the sports legends have already registered online. I think they stumbled across the link on our website and they began registering even before we have called them to register. So we believe that by the time we actively start with the legends associations and structures to call upon them to register, we would have in excess of 1,000 former players across the spectrum deployed to work with schools and to coach schools and to assist in this regard. Let me move quickly to indicate that in terms of one of our tough teams, with the passing away of Thabang Lebese, the former Kaizer Chiefs player, we helped Thabang's family to raise enough money for him to be buried, and we spoke with the Sports Trust for them to be able to support him and to bury him. But then we used the opportunity not just to leave it at that. So we established the Thabang Lebese Benefit Program. The first phase was to raise money for his burial and for a bazaar for his children, and which that part is done and finished. The second part was for us to look at the current crop of players who are playing now. Few federations have retirement schemes for these players when they are actively playing. And we wanted to have a model where all federations, we make it compulsory, at least for professional players, as a start, that as they earn, we deduct money from them and we pay into an insurance scheme for their retirement. So we don't have to have all of them coming to us after their playing days asking us to bury them and they die as paupers and so on. At least somebody has to take care of them. And the best way, it isn't government. It can be a welfareist approach. When they are active and they are buying Ferraris now and BMWs and what, they must spare some few resources towards their future and so on. And we have to make it compulsory, as rugby has made with all its players. So that's what the program is doing. We have spoken with a number of insurance operators. Alexander Forbes has been helping us on a pro bono basis to develop a workable product. Their actuaries have been doing work for us. And most likely, we are likely to work with Old Mutual, who, after we have requested almost all major insurance companies to come forward, only Old Mutual came back to say there is a product they can develop specifically for this. And even Absa insurance brokers came back to say that they can work on a once-off premium that is paid, which could cover the players. Then the third phase of this program is to look at the retired players who have finished and they are now old. But from time to time, in the Eastern Cape, boxers come to us, former soccer players and what, they come to us and their families say, we don't have the money to bury this person. So what do we do for this cohort? Because unlike the ones who are still playing, where we have an opportunity to grab something from them now, these ones have nothing and they have got nothing to contribute. And so we are asking for a special dispensation from the treasurer to allow us, because the treasurer regulations say if we want to make a donation of more than 100,000, we have to go via the legislature, which means we must come to parliament to ask that happens. But the estimate right now looks like we're going to pay a once-off premium of about 90 million to cover all these players. But if we were to do that, that is a lot of money, which we would essentially be diverting from sports development. But it is good that the country must take care of its former athletes. Morally, it makes sense that we do that. We should not just focus on development, and not looking at what then happens with this. So we are looking at ultimately this once-off premium, paying it off, and if ultimately we get the necessary approvals, hopefully by 2014 we would start this scheme, and we would know that from 2014 onwards all the former players are covered and the current crop has to be currently this benefit program looks like, and that's what will ultimately address challenges we see with baby Jake and all other people. And portion of what we're looking at for the current crop of players, I think the ones who have finished playing is a bit difficult. We can only do funerals and things like that. But for the current crop, we must also force an annuity portion where after retirement, they will get a stipend and a payment to continuously live well and to take care of themselves. So that really, there is not much we can do. The regulations are tight. We, for instance, can't give the EJ an allowance. I know Hogma did like once requested for such, and we can't. Some Atlas call us and say, my car is in service and I can't take it out, so help. You know, we really can't do that. But we are sympathetic to the cause. So the solution lies in a much more structured way in which we respond as the state to this type of phenomenon. We have also hosted the youth camps this year. Chair FA, I think you would recall we were supposed to have the youth camps in April this year. In March this year. And then we had to request Treasury to roll over the money for the youth camps because we were not ready. In the format that we were supposed to hold the youth camp, it would have cost us like 3 times the amount we should. And we quickly realized that South Africa doesn't have enough facilities for one camp for 1,500 young people at the same place for a week. And to build all the infrastructure to support these young people would have been quite costly. We ultimately had to change the methodology and say we will have 9 provincial camps of 300 young people each. And each camp, however, would have a centralized coordination, ensure that the messaging is the same right across, and ensure that the concept is virtually the same, irrespective of which province the children go to which camp, they will find virtually the same thing. And the camps were largely spot-based. Let me move quickly to the country report. We have finalized the country report. It is before the cabinet system. We seek to table this in this current session of the current parliament, and we would bring the report. I think the report was delayed because most departments could not agree on the statistics, and there was and infighting about what really is the legacy of the World Cup. But that now has been put to rest. We have finalized. We will now bring the report and ultimately we'll table it before Parliament. We hope to have a ceremony with the committee when we do table the report for the World Cup, so that the commentators have been saying a lot of what is the legacy of the 2010 FIFA World Cup without the state really saying anything. So we will have to say clearly what we see as the legacy of the World Cup, to say with certainty how much we have spent, how the money was spent, and all of this will come in one report. We have lobbied municipalities to build facilities. This has been one of the key weaknesses of our system, because our APT say our job is to lobby these municipalities to make sure that they deliver the facilities. In essence, constitutionally, we have no power to deliver the facilities ourselves. So we have to rely on provinces and municipalities to do this. As a start, with provinces, it has been a bit easier because we published a new grant framework for the DORA grant. Part of this was to ring-fence money for provinces. They can only use that money for facilities. They can't use it for any other purpose. And that has ensured that provinces would, but we had a problem. We don't have real direct control over municipalities, and we also don't give them any money. They have to budget on their own, and so we couldn't use the leverage of money to force specific outcomes. And so we had since then held the first municipal conference on sport and recreation, and that conference took an important resolution that the 15% ring-fenced in the MIG grants, the municipal infrastructure grant, must be centralized into one fund which will finance sport infrastructure. And this fund must be administered by Sport and Recreation South Africa. So we have established a working committee that is working on the modalities of how this fund is going to work and everything, and we are supported by the Treasury. We hope that in the 2015 financial year, that fund will kick in. So it isn't easy to establish a fund, a conditional grant fund of this nature. But jointly, Chair, there is hope, because the 15% of all municipalities, including metros, combined together, annually makes just below 2 billion. And with 2 billion rands a year spent on infrastructure of sport, we can make a huge dent to the, if we consistently ensure that it performs well over a period of 10 years, we can build all the 52 regional sports hubs and the regional academies and set them up. And then we can start on another basis responding to where the shortages and the gaps are in terms of the facilities on the prioritized goals. So I think that's where we are going. But the good news, the work has begun, but we hope that the fund will only kick in 2015 April, when we start the new financial year then. It is going to take us a long time to put all the mechanisms in place, and Treasury has been showing us how long it has taken them to set up a few of the other funds. And so we would have loved to have it by next year, but clearly how Treasury works is not going to be possible for us to achieve it that quickly. We also in 2011 hosted a successful South African Sports Award at Sun City. This award, I know the Honorable Raul Dati likes it, but this award are an important feature for what we do. And again, our strategy on this has been that we will develop a premier product and invest heavily in it. And beyond, we have set ourselves a target of 5 years by which these awards must be self-financing, and that the department will no longer put money in them. But all good awards, the owners pay for them when they start, and ultimately the private sector companies come on board. This year it has been easier to solicit a few other new sponsors. Last year it was very difficult because it was a new repackaged product. No one really knew what we needed to do about it. If we did a mediocre thing last year and we didn't invest as much money as we did, we would now even not have a single sponsor this year. So we have to invest significant amounts of money in the awards to make sure that by the five-year target we are at, we have set ourselves that by the next financial year, 2013-2014, we will be at an equilibrium where our contribution and the contribution of the private sector is equal. And by the 2016-2017 financial year, we believe that these awards must now be self-financing and that they must pay for themselves. And we will still retain the standards as high as they are, but we are convinced that the private sector at that time would have fully bought into the awards. This awards in the second year running have already overtaken many of the other pre-existing awards. I mean, the SA Gospel Awards do not have a similar public profile as this, and we had to commission deliberately that an independent private sector company must make an assessment of where we are with this award and how well have they grown just after 1 year of operation. And we have overtaken so many. We have even overtaken the Metro FM Awards in terms of, and this, I'm talking awards that have been running, some of them for 10 years. Yes. Even the South African traditional awards and even the summers do not come closer to where the sports awards are just after 1 year. So you can imagine with this trajectory we're keeping. And just to belabor the point, you'll also notice that these are the only awards or the only premier event in our country. In fact, the only event in our country last year, which was televised both by SuperSport and SABC live at the same time. The two broadcasters always compete and they do not want to share a product. You either sell it to SABC or that, and you will also see it within with rugby matches. If the rights are held by SABC, then SABC are held by SuperSport. SABC do something called delayed life. And after the game has finished, these ones are only seeing it. And normally they work like that. But on this awards, they were willing to share the rights. And unlike other awards, we don't buy airtime from the two broadcasters to say, we are paying for you. They give us free airtime and free production. And for the first time this year, we have insisted that to the actual hours, and they have agreed because this is a premier product. The ratings and the numbers on that Sunday last year, mind-boggling. We had in excess of 6 million people watching the hours on that day, and we had in excess of a further 13 million listening to them on radio. So if there are any awards bigger in our countries, this one, and we think that sports people deserve. Right now in the communities, it's only drug lords and every people who are hero worshipped by children and who drive Lamborghinis and all sorts of wrong things. We need an important profile of where sports can be fashionable and where children can look up to say we do this. And it is for this reason that we deliberately mix fashion, arts, and sport, because the most popular faces in our country today are artists, either in music or on TV, acting in generations and so on. If I bring today to Galoranti and I put in there and I put Queen Moroka, Sofundala, Queen Moroka from generation, children are going to run to Queen Moroka, not to the sports star. And this is wrong. So we want to leverage on the popularity of the artists and the people in the fashion industry and so on, to leverage the profile of sport to take it high. This strategy has worked perfectly for us last year. And you can see the growth, of the exponential growth of the awards. We are convinced that in about 20 years' time, the profile of this South African awards would be as great as the Chorus, as great as the Oscars and the Emmys everywhere else in the world. And that product will even be a bigger product which generates enough revenue for sports development in our country in future years. Because companies will pay so much revenue and so much royalties for this award, which we will then send into a separate cost. So the investment is not in vain, and we have a long-term view about this issue. It may look right now that they are expensive and they are not that useful, but if it is to be, we have to go this route. We have this year slightly decreased on our budget because we have more sponsors, and the more the sponsors we confirm, the lesser we will spend on the awards. And we are also convinced that with the increase in the prize money, last year category winners were getting 50,000. This year the category winners are getting 130,000, and the sports star of the year is going to go away with a whopping 1 million rands, including a new brand new car. Hashim Amla, we have said to him that he has a car, but he can use it for a year, and after a year that sponsor is going to take it back. We think it's bad, and so we have already negotiated with one of the current premier sponsors for the awards to say, let's just pay off that car of Hashim, you know, and let him own the car, because it's really sad now that we must go take the car away from him. So, I think we are trying to make this product a premier product, and if the committee can only bear with us for just 3 more years, and then we are sure that we would be where these awards pay for themselves, and they would make the country quite proud. So this year's awards would be at the Sandton Convention Center on the 4th of November. Members of the committee, I believe, have received a notice to reserve the date, and members of the committee would be all invited to this, and I promise this year you will sit in front, not at the back. On the international front, we participated in the International Olympic Committee session from 7 and 12 July in Durban. You remember the IOC session. And the IOC had virtually given us the 2020 Olympics on a silver platter, because more than half of the members of the IOC had already approached the minister to say, please bid. If you do, then it will be Africa's turn. And I think the tradition of the Olympics has been that for at least the past 18 years, the Olympic movement has always followed where the World Cup went. So, and Africa has never hosted the Olympics before, and they had felt that this was the time, and they had asked us to. And unfortunately, Cabinet decided that we would not host, citing the reason. They want to focus on service delivery, which presupposes that what we are doing is not service delivery. And yet again, we did not hear yourselves and as a representative of the people crying foul about this matter, because what we are doing is essential service delivery. And it should, unfortunately, I can't go to the community and incite them to say no. But in truth, it is sad, because it's a lost opportunity for the current generations and for what they would have delivered. Just see what the Olympics have delivered for sport in the UK, and what has been the legacy even within such a short space of time. We have also engaged with the Germans. Again, we had a big fight around this matter, because how this program worked was that we were brought people from Germany. They say South Africa has received 200 million euros, which is being to be used here. But more than half of that goes to salaries of Germans. Take it that unemployable Germans in Germany are brought here under the auspices that the money is given to South Africa, but we don't really have a say over it. So I had asked the honorable Germans to pack their bags and go back to their home country with their money, unless they agree that we do as we are supposed to do. So for the first time, they have revised what they are doing. They are now beginning to no longer do this small courts and the futsals. They have agreed to balance out and to also have full-scale pitches, because that's what we need, and that they must no longer just put them in communities. They must put them in schools to support the school sport program. And they have since agreed to this point, and we have now kissed up, and we are having a, we live happily ever after this. Next, we had the All-Africa Games in Mozambique. We supported the Mozambicans. We sent our staff in major events to go support the Mozambicans with technical capacity around hosting this. And we provided technical support in respect of athletics, boxing, canoeing, cycling, chess, and specialized transport for athletes with disabilities. So we had really, in short, co-hosted this All-Africa Games with Mozambique. Without us, Mozambicans would never have pulled through these games, and we had to do everything we could to support the neighbor, which requested, albeit at a much later stage, but we were able to help. And once again, as you know, South Africa top on the rankings of the All-African League. In conflict resolution, we were adjourned by the president via the bilateral agreement signed with Burundi to work in this area. We fundraised balls as well as sport equipment for Burundi, and we also fundraised from a private company to charter a plane to send all of the equipment to Burundi, and this was done. I think we sent the equipment early this year, around March, and all of it was delivered to Burundi, and the Burundians had a national ceremony in Bujumbura National Stadium, and the president was there with our ambassador to receive. They really valued the input we had done and the gesture the president had committed that the Department of Sport would support them with. And then we also hosted the study tour, a delegation from Uganda National Sports Council, which was led by the permanent secretary, the equivalent of the DG there. Who came, they are looking at revitalizing their national sport policy, and us having hosted the national Indaba, we were a prime destination for them to support, and we were able to share lessons and things with them. We continue to support the 9 students in Cuba who are studying university degrees in physical education as well as sports science, and the program is going well. There has been just 2 students who have been pulled out of the program. One was persistently not passing, and she also fell pregnant, and stopped studies for 1 year, and then she wanted to go back, and we have taken a decision to pull the plug on this is enough now, because she should finish the program in 3 years. She's already in the fifth year. So then one had misbehaved, went out and went to drink early hours of the morning, and came and disturbed the peace. And there international students stay, and he fought a student from the Soto, and there was a commotion there. And then we had to, they had a disciplinary hearing there, and then they expelled him from the university, and then we had to take him back. So legally, we are obliged to claim the money we had paid for him there, because of the terms and conditions of this. And he is poor. He comes from a very poor family. So I have to balance out on moral grounds a difficult decision to attach his parents' furniture and all the rest. And it looks like if I go that route, we'll also have to take the house, because the money we have paid already fast exceeds what they have. So, which is a sad thing. But by law, I'm obligated to do that. This is contract that has been signed. So we would, I don't know, but this is one of the few occasions I'm indecisive. It has been sitting on my table for 5 months now, and I don't know what to do, because it's like now punishing even the parents and what for the use of the child, you know. So which is bad. As you are aware, we are hosting next year. We have been won the rights to host the World Anti-Doping Agency. We are currently a representative of Africa on the WADA Executive Committee, with the minister and myself being alternates on the committee. And we also are the chair of the Africa Committee of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. And we are also supporting Tunisia to bring their laboratory back into practice. Right now, our laboratory in Bloemfontein is the only one on the whole continent of Africa that is accredited to do the testing and so on. We are also willing to give a once-off specialized grant for the 2013-2014 financial year to that laboratory to acquire the new equipment to analyze now the new type of samples and for the new banned substances that have come into being. The university indicates it doesn't have the requisite resources to do this, and currently it becomes much more expensive for the institute to send those specific samples to Germany for them to be tested in this regard. And we are also through the Africa Committee and the Continental Regional Anti-Doping Agency, we're encouraging all African countries, particularly the sub-Saharan African countries, to utilize our laboratory, because countries like Nigeria and so on are taking their samples to Europe for testing. And so if we can increase the volumes, then our laboratory will do enough money, and I think gradually even the financial viability of SAIDS would be much more higher. So that's where we are going with this, and that's where we are going. We'll host this conference in 2013 in June at the Sandton Convention Center. Johannesburg was the bidding city, and it was awarded the rights, and we have signed an agreement with Johannesburg, and we have begun transferring money to them. We also held successful talks with National Basketball Association, the NBA, in America, which also ensured that SABC secured the broadcasting rights and halved the cost of what they should have paid. And the NBA, in return, has kept to its word. It has already begun work. It's working in communities. We have, in the last 3 weeks, unveiled a new basketball court funded by NBA in Alexandra and on the East Front. So we are working with the NBA and also with, on their Basketball Without Borders program, where 3 weeks ago they brought a whole host of former African players who play in the NBA. To come, and some of them have donated part of their personal fortune. They have been doing a lot of work in coaching clinics, setting up teams in communities on basketball, distributing equipment, And in other instances, they've also, through their Good Causes program, assisted in partnership with Habitat for Life. I think this far they have built 10 houses for members of the community in this regard. So this partnership is going well, and we are trying to bring back the PBL, the Premier Basketball League in South Africa, and they are working with us. They, Basketball Without Borders, will deliver the University Cup for the next 3 years. They will spend their own money to develop the cup and to make sure that a league at universities on basketball is run. And in return, after 3 years of them even run that University Cup, they will hand it over to Basketball South Africa for administration. So we hope that they will give them a good product. But they are also supporting our efforts to re-establish the Premier Basketball League in the country. The minister will launch the Premier Basketball League on the 26th of November, and we hope that the first games will play in September next year,
20.
We also supported Banyana Banyana and hockey teams for the qualification for the Olympics. We gave them a lot of money, I must say. And our investment in these teams and in the athletes have been unquestioned. Maybe just to indicate to members, South Africa has not won a rowing medal in the new dispensation since we are joining the Olympics. The last time we won a medal in rowing was a silver at the Helsinki 1927 Games. And we this year, having realized and tracking the athletes, we have a division called Scientific Support, which had been tracking some promising athletes. And having seen that, we were at odds with SASCOC. SASCOC was the view that rowing as a federation is not in the top eight, ranked top eight in the world, and therefore they did not qualify for the OPEX program, which means that they would not have been given special grant. We insisted that we want to give Rowing South Africa money directly. We gave them $4 million to prepare for this, and voila, at the Olympics this year, we got 2 gold medals from Rowing in this regard. So it isn't just Banyana and hockey team that we supported. We supported rowing as well. We also supported athletes like Ernst van Dijk, who wrote to the deputy minister saying that they do not have money at all to prepare for the Olympics. And so we invested in them. In the Paralympics, they brought us the medals. So we also gave SASCOG a special grant this year for the Olympics. This is in addition to what we give SASCOG annually. We give SASCOG $12 million a year. So our preparation for Olympics doesn't start in the Olympic year. We already, each year we give SASCOG $12 million to say start preparing. And on an ad hoc basis, they also say, we want in South Africa to participate in the All Africa Games or the Zone 6 Games or what. We pay for that. It isn't SASCOG that pays. We pay for preparation of Team South Africa and for the elite athletes to be in the high-performance centers. Right now, we've got a total of about 126 athletes in the high-performance center at University of Pretoria and Stellenbosch, funded by us to be in those high-performance centers. So our contribution and commitment to financing the athletes is quite high, and remains unquestionable in this regard. We may not be able to do everything with the limited money we have, but our strategy of prioritization and of putting money where we think we stand a better chance of getting returns, I'm sure you have seen the yielded results with the London Olympics. Let me pass, we gave Banyana also the money to do their thing in Germany, their camp, and we also paid for their practice match with Ghana at Dobsonville Stadium, and so on. So we have done significantly a lot to help prepare Team South Africa for this. And SASCOG generally, when they didn't write to us to say that they don't have money. We heard when they came here to brief you. We heard via the media that they say that they do not have money. And then the minister asked them why it was the matter not raised with us. We had to postpone 5 of our programs and postpone them to this current financial year we are in, and have as well that money and ask Treasury to allow us to via the money and put it as a special transfer to prepare the Olympics and to help them. And we gave them a total of $27 million to that extent, excluding all this other money we have been giving to the federations. Cumulatively, it amounted to 49, I think. Cumulatively, it amounted to 49, all the grants we had been given the Federation, as well as FASCOC in the Olympic year. This, in addition to what we had been giving annually ever since the last Olympics. So I think the commitment to supporting Team South Africa is quite huge, and it shouldn't be unfair. I know it's easier if an athlete say, I have not been supported. We will not be able to support everybody on an equal footing, but our commitment is there. We hosted the NICA program for the All Africa Games in Maputo, and we also hosted one in New Zealand for the Rugby World Cup. IKAYA is a home away from home for all South Africans, and it has been doing a great job. And ever since we started doing this IKAYA, ironically, now the major nations are doing the same thing. At this year's Olympics, America, Nigeria, everybody were having their little IKAYAs under their own name. But guess what? Our IKAYA is always the most attractive one. Because of South African dancers and drummers who stand on the outside, people flock there. And we chose this year a pole position within the Olympic precinct there at the South Bank for the London Olympics. And the chair at least went to the IKAYA. He saw what I mean by that. And the IKAYA was full. Like, how many people went through IKAYA? More than 50,000 people went through the IKAYA this year while it was in session. And we had a good system of security at the door counting everybody who comes in. And we are sure that we had more than 50,000 people who went through the IKAYA this year. And we, for the first time to diversify, knowing that the rent to the pound, everything we could have paid here, we have to multiply it by 30. To be able to pay for it. So the cost was to become too exorbitant for us. So we enlisted the support of provinces, and three provinces came to the party, and about a total of six departments also came to the party to partner with us. Some contributed in kind, some contributed direct financially, and so that mitigated our cost in the main. I think the IKAYA would have been very, very expensive for us had those provinces and other parties come and supported us. The ministerial outreach program.
I'd like to say something, please, Chairman. You know the DG is already speaking for about 2 hours. And that man must be tired. I hear his voice there. He's drinking the water, Chairman. And really, I think I don't know what how the program is, because we are only about a third or half into this program, Chairperson. I wonder, can't we give the man a rest a little bit? And if we could perhaps ask questions, or perhaps, you know, I don't know whether we are going to have lunch, Chairperson. That's the other thing. It was already nearly half past 12 too. That, but really to accommodate the DD. DG Chairperson, as well as us.
Chairperson. Chair, I've decided to deliberately focus the bulk of my time on the program. I think when I come to finances, it's going to take me 10 minutes. Because the issues are not anyhow big. So I thought that I would use today's opportunity, because we don't get this opportunity often, to thoroughly share with the committee what we are doing, so that the context is understood, because the bulk of the time the questions that come from members of this committee when they come to us, my realization all the time is that I think we're not communicating effectively, and that is why they are asking these questions in this manner. But if I explain the rationale and everything, I've deliberately decided that I was going to focus more on the programs. In any case, on the programs I'm left with two slides, and so thereafter, I'm getting into funding and everything, which will take me 10 minutes.
Okay. No, as long as you still have fire in your bed, you can get water.
I'm one of
my people. You can check water.
No, we.
About the director general, I think what we. Thank you.
I'll conclude quickly and swiftly. On the ministerial outreach programs, we had those. We went to Fed in the Eastern Cape, and we looked at school spot in the main as well as what is happening there. We also distributed equipment. In, we had a launch at of the school spot program at the University of Johannesburg and a kickoff in Mamelodi. And the opening of facilities in Western Area, which was an artificial pitch, Soweto, the artificial golf pitch. Pretoria, we opened the swimming pool, and Nelson Mandela Bay Rugby Academy. These are not all the activities. These are the only activities we honored in terms of going through them. But there's a whole host. We have a long list of the facilities that were opened last year by municipalities as well as sport trusts and our agencies. And we also had a huge thing on in Butabelo on the with HIV/AIDS organizations. We had an aerobathon, which was an aerobics marathon, and communities participated. I think there in Butabelo, in excess of 5,000 people participated in this outreach for the minister. And we also distributed everywhere we go. We distribute sport equipment to local clubs and local, and we work with provinces. Okay, we had continued with outcome 12D, which is the minister's own performance agreement with the president. We look at that and we then bring it into programmatic manner into what we do. And so the minister had a huge stakeholder engagement with all those parties and partners in this regard. We have now established about 35 departmental task teams, which in the last 5 months of the financial year had undertaken a lot of work, including solving the issue of working in silos by our different units. And this accounts largely for why we have been able to make significant improvement in what we do. And we are also looking at building team spirit and breaking down the stigmas as well as the perceptions that exist with this. On funding, like I said, 26 million for SASCOC for preparation of the Olympics. The 15% of the MIG has spoken about that. And here are some of the challenges and the recommendations that we are looking at. One of our weaknesses is the organizational structure not supporting the strategy. I think ever since the INDAVA and the new sports plan, we are looking really modeling. We don't have a recreation unit. We don't have a unit to look at athletes' development and support pathway. We don't have unit for this, for that, and on our current structure, our support functions are bloated as opposed to the core line functions. And with restructuring, we have sought to address this matter in that way. So this is one of the key things, and we're unable to correct this unless Treasury doesn't say what it is saying, agrees with us that we need to expand and have the new units to respond better to the market. But as it's now, the budget is going to be cut. So we can't proceed with restructuring under the circumstances of this nature. It is doubtful. All we can do now is reprioritize the structure, is to then redirect some of the officials who were doing something to ask them to no longer do that and do new things. But some things are bound to suffer in that equation. But that is one of our biggest challenges. The other one is the lack of learnership as well as the National Youth Service Program. We have a learnership program, but it's on a small scale. The need out there by students who graduate in sports science and so on, in our country, the sports sector is not that big that they will work for SuperSport or maybe SAB Sport. Maybe some of them will work for the Sports Trust, a few and so on, but that's it. The only single biggest employer for them is the state, the Department of Sport, both provincially and ourselves, as well as municipalities. But we are so small at the department to harbor everybody. But if we were to give them a kickstart in life, we need a big learnership program, and we don't have the resources for it. So this is one of the great weaknesses. Again, the other thing is that lack of a greater skills development program for staff within the department. Kakasita has very few trainers. It's only now we are getting them. Even in the school sport thing, Peter de Villiers is being supported to write up the manuals to be able to train. He knows the data, he knows everything, but it's not written anywhere. No manuals are created as the standards for training in rugby. Peter Msimani is now being assisted by the same teacher to have one for football. Sports like netball, we are still to start. We have not even started. We have challenges of that nature. Even for us to send our own departmental officials on CETA character training programs, those programs are virtually non-existent. And so we are having those challenges. One of our biggest challenges, and which I think we agree with the Uta General, has been on the weak control environment in the department. I'm sure that's why you have seen previously we had things like unauthorized expenditure, we had fruitless and wasteful expenditure and all that. We have had to do a few things and implement them almost immediately to arrest the situation. In the last 5 months of the financial year, we did a lot of work that has helped us root out and solve many of our problems. And I'm sure you are also aware, as I've reported earlier, that the bulk of the people, after we introduced the new measures, we began catching the wrongdoers. You know, we became much more vigorous now. And we are now where we are in a bit of stabilization. And we must move with speed towards where the comfortable levels, where we know that the control environment is much more stronger. And we have been streamlining policies and ensuring that we introduce new policies. Just to give you the figures, in the last 5 months, we signed a total of 7 new policies, so which gives you the indication of how much we are strengthening the control environment to respond to the many audit queries that we used to get on what I could simplify as management challenges. But we are arresting all of that. The other key challenge was a lack of common philosophy of work in the department. Before, depending on who you talk to in the department, they would have given you their own personal opinion of what the matter is. But most of the things we did were never reduced to concept documents which are approved, concept and methodologies of how we should work. We looked like different sections looked like 17 different departments, but yet we were just one department. And even between us and provinces, it's only now that we are forcing them by the conditional grant framework to do things in a specific manner. Then we just dump the money with them and hope that they'll do the right thing. And even when they didn't do the right thing, we still just dump the money with them again. So now we're no longer doing that. I think the complaints you're going to get from the Auditor General about this matter, about us next year, is going to be that we gave federations money late, we gave provinces money late, but we were not willing to give them money unless they have submitted the business plan. You know, and that was as simple as that for us. And they submitted, the last one submitted on the 30th of May, you know, when by law they are supposed to submit before 31st March. You know. So the last one submitted, and we were adamant we will not transfer a cent to them until they do. And even after we gave them the first quarter tranche in the second quarter, 7 out of the 9 didn't comply by sending the quarterly report. And I wrote to them and I said, note that we will not transfer a cent further to you until you are compliant. So I think the queries you're going to get from about us is going to be that we gave them money late. It will not be that we gave departments that don't comply money, which that I gave them money late is a better evil than the other one. So while it is an evil, I acknowledge it is an evil. We have to give them money on time. But it is best that I don't just irresponsibly transfer unless I know. So I think that is one of the key challenges that we will still have in our books next year, that we did give them money late. Even with Love Life, it will show that we gave them money in the third quarter. But in essence, we were not willing to do this. And we hope the committee will support us on this specific matter. The threats are uncontrolled bidding to host international events. This we want to address now by bringing amendments to the Sports Act. Because right now we have guidelines and federations just continuously bid without approval by government. And once they win those rights, government is now adjoined to pay millions. And it also defocuses us because we are not consistent. There is a year, last financial year, we hosted a total of 18 World Cups, albeit them being small, a small federation. But it is World Cups nevertheless, and they require money, they require resources. We too have to brief the police and our other partners of how many they must prepare themselves and brief. We would have said to the police that we're anticipating to host 3 major events this year. And all of a sudden, surprises come. From time to time, you get an odd letter 2 months before the actual tournament. Either they are coming to us because they need money or they need support, or they have hit a brick wall with the police. Now they want us to unlock the processes for them. We're no longer going to do this. We must outlaw this practice because it's costly to the country. It's actually defocusing the country. So it's one of the big things we must look at. We also want to change the political landscape and strategic direction of the department, as well as addressing effective performance management system. We also have a proliferation of unregulated sport bodies, which come up from time to time. Some of them give themselves very nice names, you know, South African Association of Amateur Sports, you know, and then you ask yourself, and they collect money from private sector, they do this, no one audits them, they are not accountable to anybody, they are not members of FASCOC, they are not recognized by the minister and so on. We also have to outlaw this practice and ensure that we regulate this and regulate us for this. We have other challenges. Recreation is still a problem, but we have begun. I'm sure you have seen we have launched the youth camps now. We have started with that. We are also rolling out, we are working with wide open spaces to roll out recreational facilities in city parks and so on. And the private sector at least is paying for this program, and wide open spaces is fundraising. So we are about to sign a PPP, a public-private partnership with wide open spaces for this. Transformation in sport is still a big problem. That is why we are asking you to host a session with the EPG. The Eminent Persons Group on Sports Transformation has been agreed to in the sports plan and resolved at the INDAVA. The minister has appointed that committee. There is a transformation scorecard as well as the charter which they must police. We are providing them with support in the department to help them achieve their mandate. So it will be better if they share with you their perspectives. We have decided that we must not influence their modus operandi, and we must not influence how they work. So we want them to be as independent as possible from us and to make the thorough recommendations. School sport remains a critical challenge for us because of facilities. We have not got a cent from the treasury on this. We have a few companies, Coke, McDonald's, a few others who are saying they will support us in this regard. And then we also have an uneven spread of competition opportunities where the historically white schools and independent schools get the lion's share of money in this regard, and the previously disadvantaged schools get nothing. We also have a shortage of suitable sporting equipment and kit. This we are addressing. We have issued a transversal tender, which provinces, I can tell you right now, they don't like this tender. They will do everything in their power to frustrate this tender, because when we took over, we were paying about 3 times for a bond what we should be paying at game. So while the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act says that 80% of our determination of whether a person gets a tender or not must be on the price, and the other BEE and functionality and what the scores come into the other 20, we have decided to go against those prescripts and do it reverse. And we said price is not a major determinant for us, because we have done a price index ourselves. We have gone to game, to macro, we have gone to suppliers to look at how much a ball costs, and we have listed everything that we want and said at this price. And we said we want to see functionality must be the key determinant. If you are a company and you are capable to deliver, you have a warehouse, you have trucks, you have this, you have that, and you can deliver, here is a price. Are you interested in delivering the services at this price? And so the companies, ironically, some of them, I think out of the four we have appointed, three of them used to do business with the department and with provinces before. And they are the ones who have been selling at three times the amount. All of a sudden, they were willing to pay for to deliver the same services at a reasonable price. So we have since issued that tender and informed provinces to only buy at those prices and at those service providers. Provinces don't want to do that. There is a big war going on, and they are trying to subvert the tender. They are trying to raise legalities and everything. They are trying to say that they should have been part of the process when we appointed these people, if they are to buy from it and so on. There's people seeking legal opinions on the tender and so on. But we are adamant. We will not want to pay more than what we should be paying. And so, and our limited resources must be stretched to reach wider beneficiaries. And I think that's the only reason why we are doing this. Let me move quickly to the issue of this one I've covered on the chair and the infrastructure grant. In terms of our performance, you'll see there that there's limited things that we have not performed. I must give context to our performance information. We did an APP as is required before the financial year starts. And during the financial year, we had the sports in Daba in November. And the sports in Daba approved the sports plan. And the political mandate we received from the minister was that we have to start implementing the plan right away. Ideally, what should happen is that we should wait for 1 April, on which we introduce new programs. But after the Indaba, we were told that we can't just continue doing the wrong things for the sake of it. We have gone to an Indaba, and we have agreed that there are new priorities. We must now focus on those new priorities. And so the new priorities, as is were the ones, some of them I briefed you about, that we have undertaken, things like the youth camps and so on and so forth. So we had to stop some of the programs that were originally in the APP that we had to do, and we had to ask for guidance from Treasury to be able to achieve this. This we were granted, and we were able to then buy and start that. But when the Auditor General came to audit, we explained this to him. He was sympathetic of our situation, but indicated that his job is to audit only on what was in the APP. You know. So consequently, his report indicates that we have managed to achieve 47% of the targets that we had set ourselves. But this was not by accident, it was by design. We had to abandon the whole thing. The only thing the Auditor General allowed us to do was to write on the new programs in the annual report, although they were not part of the APP. He said it is okay. They will function the report as is with the reflection on these new programs that were originally not in the APP, although he says he has not audited those programs. So that's where we are. And this, when you see this target or you see the performance, you must consider it in context that it is the Auditor General's view, having audited half the information and not half the other programs that we have undertaken since the advent of the INDA. So in the last 5 months of the financial year, the work that we have done has not been factored into this. So we have all those things in place, the strategic plan as well as the internal audit. And we have now the sports plan, which has been approved by Cabinet in April this year. And we also have a strategic plan 2012-2016 that was approved and tabled, as well as the annual performance plan. I'm not going to touch on all these other ones. The disciplinary issues I've spoken about and the outcomes. In terms of females account for 28% of the field senior management level posts, we still need to appoint 7 more. Fortunately, we have vacancies, and we are also in the process of recruiting. In terms of disability, we are one of the few departments, 3 at the national level, that have achieved the 2% target of persons with disabilities. And 2 of the 4 officials who are disabled, 2 of them, one is at senior management and the other is at middle management level. And mostly the other 2 departments that have achieved this including one of them is women, children, and persons with disabilities. So that's fine. But the other one, all the 2% are in elementary jobs, not in senior management service. Out of race is 174 field posts. 82% are Africans, colors constitute 4%, Indian 2%, and white 11% of the staff complement. A total of 89 marketing and communication events projects were implemented to promote SRSA. This has helped us improve the public profile of who we are. I think in the survey done by HSRC, you know that we're in the top 5 of the most known departments and the most known programs that are there. On legal services, there's bills and acts and regulations that we are bringing into stream. We will table the Sport and Recreation Amendment Bill. We'll also table the Boxing Amendment Bill, basically the FA Combat Sport Bill, which will repeal the Boxing Act, that will ensure the management of all combat sports, including martial arts and so on. We'll also bring an amendment to the South African Institute of Drug Free Sport Act to give the institute more power to undertake litigation better, and also to be able to test children in schools because there is a big problem there of substance abuse at that level. We are also bringing the fitness regulations this year. We'll be publishing them in the Government Gazette early next year. The fitness industry, this industry has been unregulated for a very long time, so we'll do that in this regard. In program two, Chair, the financial management aspects and everything, we had 29 against, a target of 29 against 43 projects which were monitored and evaluated. We have actually improved largely on this. We have also worked with on general training manuals with CACILIA, and this is to support sport facilitators. We are beginning to address the weaknesses I've raised. Let us move to the issue of mass participation, which is most important. We are at 100% success rate with regards to the number of hubs that we said we will convert into self-sustainable entities. That has happened. And we have also the legacy projects for the 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup implemented there. We have achieved the requisite targets as well as the number of festivals and tournaments that we said we were going to hold. We have held all of them. Let me move to facilities. This again is still a big challenge. We however have managed to lobby that. We have set ourselves a target that at least 100 new sports facilities for that financial year must have been established and opened. 163 were opened by municipalities and provinces and our agencies, so which was a good thing. And then we also have a facilities provision which were handed over by the minister, four of them. The facility audits is continuing. We are hoping that by 2014 we would finish the total audit on how many sports fields that the country has and ranking them and all that. This work is a lot of work and it is going to be very expensive to conclude. But if we don't know it, we can't manage it. And if we don't know how many fields we have, there's never a way we're going to tell with certainty what are the gaps and where we are supposed to be. The financial statements, there are still housekeeping matters that were raised by the AG which we need to address. And we also have to rein in the staff turnover, particularly in finance and supply chain. And we have now advertised posts in those units. And then we have an unqualified audit opinion, at least for 3 consecutive years now. And we, for the first time this year, we have no emphasis of letter. Last year we had about, the year before we had about 6. The year under review, we have no emphasis of matter at all. We have been able to clear all the major issues of concern for the Auditor General. And then we have also reduced significantly the number of issues raised by the Auditor General in the management letter, from a total of about 193 audit queries we have managed in the last financial year to reduce them to about 68. And I can tell you now, the committee, that about 42 of those matters we have already addressed right now in the new financial year. Mostly, many of them have been addressed by the introduction of the new policies that we have brought before. So this addresses our issue. That is a comparison of our expenditure patterns versus budget. As you may see, this year, 2011-2012, we had an under-expenditure of about 10 million. I must give again this into context. 7 of that 10 million was earmarked funds, was ring-fenced. It was for Love Life. And having stopped the Love Life gains, there was no need to transfer all the money. We did ask Treasury towards the end of the financial year if they will allow us to use that money for other purposes. They refused. And so the 7 million had to be surrendered back. We couldn't do anything on it. The bulk of the other money was realized savings, largely on the indigenous gains, because we had budgeted hoping that we will go big and budgeted more for the gains, but we then, the delivery methodology had to change, and we delivered the gains much more affordable than we thought. And with Swanee coming to the party as a partner with us, it meant that some of the things we had to pay for, they had to. So cumulatively, we had under expenditure. I mean, there are sections where the under expenditure in some units was about 3,000 rand, you know, so which is as much as close to the budget as possible. So I think, again, the under expenditure must be considered in context. It must be known that we simply did not have, sports don't have money. So to send back 10 million to the Treasury looks like a lot in the context of who we are and a small budget we are. But if 7 million is ring-fenced and it's earmarked funds and we can't do anything about it, there's limited thing we can do as such. So we spend about 98.8% of our budget. This, by government standards, is by far a good expenditure trend, because the worst thing that can happen for me as a accounting officer is if I overspend by 100 rand, I will not be forgiven, you know. So because it's going to be recorded as an authorized expenditure, you know. So I should not exceed the vote. So I must bring it as much as possible closer to a zero as I can. But there is no exact science of doing that when you work with budget. So at 98.8%, it's a damn good good practice in terms of expenditure. That's the expenditure pattern per program, and you will see where we have spent the bulk of the money and where we have spent less. And like I said, if you look at the expenditure pattern by economic classification, you get to see the figures as they are. And you also see that even on compensation of employees, we are quite very, very close to zero at 99.1%. And on the conditional grant, 100% spending in terms of this. In terms of our transfers to third parties or non-profit institutions, about 98.1%. So you can see we are almost in all classifications, almost spot on. But then you would see that under machinery and equipment, we are not doing so well at 52.8%. We are about to move from where we are. My limited knowledge of space and facilities management says that do not buy anything new when you are about to move. You know, so if you are planning on moving, don't buy, because the new place may not accommodate your tables and your things and all that. And it also increases your cost of removal and movement, and it disorganizes you. Buy when you are at the new place. So as much as possible, we have been limiting our expenditure on machinery and equipment and all sorts of things. But then our thing was halted again by Public Works, saying that they are revising their guidelines on new buildings and so on. And largely after the GPLS issues pertaining to buildings, so we had to wait again. So we don't know exactly when we'll move, but we have begun planning processes around the big move. So that's where we are. You can see in terms of the estimated expenditure that we are looking at the transfer payments, Love Life still gets the lion's share of about 30.4 million. And all other transfers to our public entities are as such. That is the transfers to provinces and how the expenditure looks like in terms of this. By law, provinces are supposed to surrender the money they have not spent back to us, and we have to surrender it back to the national fiscus. We have already returned to the provinces to say they must surrender. And we have an ace card up our sleeve. If they do not surrender the money in the last tranche, the fourth quarter tranche, we are going to deduct the what they have not surrendered from that tranche before we transfer. We are committed to sticking to the prescripts of the law and as it's determined. Let me, the audit opinion is known to members, and this was an amount for irregular expenditure. We had about 204 transactions where three codes could not be found. And some of these problems, the law provides, Treasury Regulation 16A4 provides for an accounting officer to be able to approve deviation from normal supply chain regulation. If there are, you can't get the records, but the reasons have to be recorded why. So you have instances before we began the tightening of the controls of where people asked just for two codes, and then they did not, they had good reasons why they could not get the third code. But they then do not record the reasons, and also they do not apply that the accounting officer must authorize deviation. So when the Auditor General sees that, he has to record it as a regular expenditure, because regular expenditure only has to happen where you have got the records or you have gone to tender and so on. So you've got the bulk of things like that in it. But you'll see that in the last 5 months of the financial year, such issues have been eliminated. Now, it's standard practice that people apply for deviation and all sorts of matters. Then the other key thing, this is a big problem, Chair, and I think it is an issue that will stay with us for some time until Treasury issues the new practice notes on this matter, because as is now, you have a person whose tax clearance, it says it is non-compliant. I'll give you an example. Certain services are longer, and that is why you see that the transactions are so few. Certain services are longer. By the time we ask for a code, we check whether you have a tax clearance, and we find that it is valid. But perhaps it's remaining with 59 days to expire. By law, we can exclude you from participation, because your tax clearance is still valid at the time we are asking for a quotation from you. And then you submit, and then we find that you are the cheapest person, and we appoint you. But by the time we have to pay you, your tax clearance has now expired. And now when it has lapsed, by law we should not pay you. And then we withhold payment. And then we are asking you to submit all the documentation to us, give us the tax clearance, so we can pay you. But if you are not submitting, the Auditor General doesn't care. He starts counting at the time you submitted the invoice to us. And when it passes 30 days, he says, you have not met the prescript. But he will not consider the fact that you have not submitted all documentation to us. So we have now to circumvent this, set in our finance policy a new amendment to say, no, we will only count when all documentation, not just the invoice, when all documentation has been received. But Auditor General standards is to count from the day the invoice is received, and which is sad, because we've got no control over such matters. And if you are remaining with 30 days, we can't give you the order before expiry of your test. It's unfair practice. We can be taken to court for that. So we simply have to give you the order and then hope that by the time you submit your invoice, you also submit a new tax clearance certificate. And I had refused to pay people who have not submitted tax clearance certificate. And this matter drag on, and you find that the person has like 169 days. And there is a reason for that. if he's small and the financial year had passed in February and he had not filed the returns, they are not going to give him the tax clearance. You know, he has to sort himself out first and do the taxes and sort himself with the receipt. And if he owes, and then he comes to me and negotiates and say, please, for me to pay the tax man, you must pay me so I can pay him and so he can give me the tax clearance certificate. So we are now in a conundrum because the tax clearance will show when it was reissued and it will be after the date I have paid him. So we are now caught. For him to get the clearance, he must pay the receiver. For him to pay the receiver, he must get money from me, I must pay him. So there were times I had to say, well, he's not helpful, so let me just pay, so they can pay the receiver, because it's not helping anybody. And once I do that, this is going to appear as a query that, no, you paid him when you were not supposed to pay him. But if he says to me, I'm being liquidated, people I have bought things from now want their payments, and I can't pay, and I can't pay the tax man for me to give you this and what. So we have a problem, and it is not agreed that I must pay the receiver the money that he owes them and I pay him the balance. That is not allowed. So I have to pay him, and we sit with this. So this is going to go on and on. I think until a new practice note on what we should do as accounting officers. I've written to Treasury already about this matter to say they've got to help us, but there is no new practice note. So as is, it's one of the few things I'm sure that they will stick with us for some time. And then we had these issues in previous financial years which have come on. Most of them have now been removed from our books because these are prior years. In the current financial year, we don't have major issues at all around these issues, and so we are okay. Let me move towards conclusion and say we believe we have a significantly improved report from last year. We don't have issues of irregular expenditures and unauthorized expenditures anymore, and we have done a significant improvement on our management of our finances and in improving on program delivery and as well as program support and in keeping the budget in check and in basically making a small miracle of achieving so many things we are doing with such little budget we can. And the secret has lied in our partnerships and in leveraging on the money we have to get much more money from partners and sectors and in streamlining what we do. I think the biggest challenge for us, Chair, in conclusion, has been that it has not been a decision on what to do. It has been on taking decisions on what not to do. Because the problem with our department was trying to be everything to everybody. And we ended thinning out the money and spreading it so thin that even wherever we give it is so little that it makes no impact. You know. Now by refocusing on fewer things and doing few things but doing them extremely well, I think that's what has helped us turn around the corner, and we can only grow from here. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Lee has gone on to work on it. I think they have really presented a very comprehensive report and would allow colleagues to comment and to see what else. Of course, in terms of finances, we have praised the general. That was the general.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've said to the committee that there was about 600 athletes who would be part of the school sport Olympics, disability athletes. I'm actually wrong. They are not 600. They are 1,402 athletes in the ones that are coming there, which constitute about 27% of all athletes to perform at the Olympics.
Yeah. Good number.
Okay, Colin.
This annual report presented.
Yeah. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chief. I can't call you the Chief. You're not the Chief. This is Tasman. You know how you present that. You touch on all the issues which the AG process of trying to correct those issues. The one issue that the boxing South Africa was here. No, no, not going to take over the robots. They've got a problem with this MOU. They have signed, and in your input you said that SABC has also signed. I just want to know, I can't remember we're not boxing here. Has this MOU been signed after they've been here? And the other issue, I'd like to welcome the report of the FIFA 2010, so that one can be also be on par when you are confronted by people on the ground. You know, the benefits out of that and what, I'm sure that will be reflected in that report. The one issue concerned with the damage raised, you know, this is of you all being handled with G. The AG has raised the issue of the IT. And both you and the minister has indicated that out of the 27,000 schools, 11,000 has been registered. Am I right? 13,000, yes. Now, if you don't have an IT strategy, how are we going to be in a position to, where are we registering this thing? Then, where does this register reside? Does it reside with you, Department of Sports and Recreation, or does it reside with the Education Department? And how much did this registration cost? And how many jobs have you created? Because the president in the state of the national address, that was one of the landed that each and every department must create jobs. Now, if you have this IT, how many jobs has it created? Because of time, let me just highlight those.
We are full-time members of parliament. We can continue until you are tired.
Oh. I'm just going through and then I'm going to wrap it up so that it's irrelevant.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I would also like to thank the DG for his presentation. And I would further like to ask one question related to the awards at Sun City, whether Beyonce will still form part of the... And then my second question, Chairperson, is about the consultants and contractors an agency outsourced services. I see, I just want to know why is the amount so high there? And then the other one is about the travel and subsistence. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, DG, for your detailed and informative presentation. I think we are convinced that this department is moving now, unlike the previous years. Remember that previously they got a disclaimer, qualified reports, but now I think we are moving and we'll support you towards 2014 in getting the clean audit. The issue of, though you have explained this issue of vacant posts within your department, I think this has affected the department previously because we have raised it since 2009, 10, 11, that why can this department fill the vacant post? Hence, we were funded. And there was a plea from the president too that all posts must be funded. And though we agree with you that you're going on the restructuring process, that is why you are not filling this post. But now, let's fast track this matter so that it cannot affect the next coming budget. And the issue of disability too, I think the 2% is the minimum target. Don't feel ashamed to employ people with disabilities in this, especially in the SMS profession. We'll be glad if you can accommodate them too. Previously, the department have been assisting four NGOs, being your Love Life, your SCORE, your Sports Trust. And we met previously with the Sports Trust, and we were convinced as this department that they're doing a beautiful work in our communities. But I'm not quite sure now, because the report says that you are only supporting two NGOs, SASCOP being classified in that NGO and the Love Life. Where is the Sports Trust for now? Have you given them the new mandate and the responsibility? Have you funded them? Because I haven't seen anything in the finances that you have allocated them funding for the previous for the year under revenue. Yeah, Chief, let me pause.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would also join the colleagues in thanking the DG for a detailed report. I've got quite a number of questions. I'll try to be very brief, Chair. The first one, DG, is in the promotions for the period under review in the department, it speaks to zero promotions. Yet you've got 66.6% of the people leaving the department going to other departments. Doesn't that speak to, you know, a ceiling that can't be broken through in the department? Is there growth in the department for employees to progress? And then of the registered schools in the program, the 13,000 or 11,000 and 13,000, you know, how many of those are rural, of the schools? And then I also want to just touch on the issue of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which you touch on in the presentation on 65. There are four prior years that you have listed, and most of them does not seem to have been concluded. What is the progress on that, on those four issues? And then I did notice that on the events that you hosted, you had a target of about 14, I think, or 15. You ended up hosting 19, but the number is higher than what you had. I just don't think to have it here. How did you offset that, and how are you coordinating those events that you had hosted? I'll find it for you, and I'll just give you the relevant page. I had it down there somewhere. And of course, you spoke at length about the issue of retirees and sport, the athletes, and how you are working with, you know, APSA and all mission and so on. I want to ask the question of education of athletes as a means of, you know, post-athletic careers. Are you emphasizing that you run away from a situation whereby they are so little dependent on these programs being put in place, so that at the very least they can come out of post-athletic, you know, post their careers and actually get jobs on the basis of education that they've received? So are you equipping them with education? And Chair, I will pause there for not anything else. I'll come back. I'll just find that page for the DG, and I will ask, crave the Chair's indulgence to give it to me. Thank you.
In 5 minutes time, there are other committees that are coming to meet here. And the arrange of these meetings, I'm not sure they arrange this meeting this one. Because there are many portfolio committees in Parliament, that sounds about 37 or 38. I think we don't have many venues for all these meetings, therefore, some are in the morning until 1 and then another one. Director General, I know that you can summarize many of this hearing.
The BSA MOU was signed. It was written by our legal services, given to SABC, given to BSA, and they found each other. The key issues of dispute were around the value of the rights, which we agreed that we will resolve by the addendum to the MOU, which is an outstanding matter that must still be finalized. But the intent to transfer the rights to restore them to FA, to PSA, that has been done. So we still have to resolve the issue of the rights, of how much a match at a bantamweight or at a flyweight or at what the rights should be like, because all the properties and the belts are with PSA. Then the issue of the IT strategy, this issue, it isn't really our problem alone. I'm sure the Director General must have picked it up across all the departments. It is a problem of G2, the Government Information and Technology Office, run by CETA, which had to make a decision. Earlier on, Cabinet decided that we should consider open source software as government. Now, if we are to go on an open source platform, the hardware and everything we require to do this in order to save on licensing fees, it means that our configuration must be totally different. And if we are to continue on what we have, and which is the platforms we are on now, largely VIP platforms and as well as VPI platforms, virtual private information networks platforms. And this VPN networks that we are on, one of them can be Novell, can be Microsoft, and so on. We have to pay licensing on it. So the decision, the Digital Council, had been postponing to make this decision for the last 3 years. So you have a mixed bag. Some departments have opted to do open source on some products, and some have opted to do VPN networks, and some departments have both, which defeats the purpose of having an open source, because you are still paying for the licenses, so why do you need the other one, you know, which is free and so on. So all these have advantages and disadvantages, and the decision has not been made for a long time, and we were now tired ourselves with this, because we can't buy equipment, we can't even do certain things, because we can't plan. Ultimately, our management committee in September took a decision to say, with or without the digital consent resolution, we are proceeding. And our representative on the digital consent indicated that to that council to say, because we have not taken a decision for 3 years, our management committee has decided to now proceed. So we have decided to build a VPN network, and so we are paying for it. I think it will cost us about $3 million over the next 3 years. So that's what we are doing. We have already taken that decision. We have finalized our IT policy now, and I'm about to sign it off. I think I'll be stopped by an act of God why I should not sign. But we are proceeding. So consequently, that solves many of our problems. Then when we know what platform we are on, we can start now investing into IT softwares and all this. So, for instance, the issue of the registration of sport legions was delayed largely because we did not know. Because when we design a software system, we must design it knowing for what platform is it going to be used for. And so we're going to make decisions, because we now need a lot of systems to record a lot of things and to keep track. We now need an Atlas pathway tracking system that will place all amateur athletes into this system, and when they score something at some meet, we record the time they have scored. When they measure their blood pressure, what they record everything in the system, and we track them right through the lifelong tracking system. So if you do not know the platform you are going to be on, then you are in trouble. So I've been lobbying other DGs to set up VPNs on Microsoft platforms, so that when the Digital Council ultimately comes, it will find that all of us are on the same platform. So it will force them by default, by what we have, to choose what we have chosen. Otherwise, it's not workable. I mean, where we are, we have had this problem recurring for 3 years, that we don't have an IT strategy. But it isn't our problem, really. It is a problem, it's a government-wide problem, that this is a problem. The registration of schools, we have a software system that we have designed, and there is also an EMIS system, the Education Management Information System, run by DIB, DBE, which from where we Finland into this. If you ask me, we have asked our interns to be the ones who do the data capture, and they've been doing that work. So are there new jobs created out of this capturing process? No. These are interns who have been in the system. The school sport program, will it create jobs? Yes. Starting with EPWP program, which we have negotiated, and social development as a lead partner says that we will institute an EPWP program. It's still early days. That's why I'm not reporting anything on it. And we will get there. The sports awards will beyond be there. Let me once and for all clarify the matter of beyond. We issued a tender, Chair, asking for... we issued a tender asking companies to bid for hosting of the sports awards, and we had about a return of about 47 interested companies, shortlisted to 12, again to from the 12 shortlisted to 6, and from 6 to 3, and out of the remaining 3, they were asked to make presentations to the adjudication committee to say if you were to be given the awards to manage, what would you do? You know, and what would be your concept? And so on. One of the companies bidding there is a BEE partner to big concerts, a big thing that does big concerts in South Africa. And they indicated that they are in partnership with big concerts. And from where they are sitting, if we are keen on doing the awards and we give it to them, they are bringing beyond in October this year to South Africa. And they are paying beyond, and beyond is going to be here. If they are keen, we are giving them the contract or the rights. They are willing to borrow us beyond at the sports awards. They are willing to bring, because our activity is on the 4th of November. They are willing to, that weekend, to shift their proposed concert by 1 week to that weekend. The awards are on a Sunday. The concert was scheduled for a Saturday. To have the concert on a Saturday, and on a Sunday, Beyonce come as a guest appearance, a guest performer, to perform at the awards. That is their draw card. That is their draw card of why they are likely going to do this. So we were keen and interested, obviously. But then we wanted certain mechanics to be finalized, including that the management of Beyond must agree to such an arrangement, and we need certainty that such a thing would happen and that we would not pay for Beyond's coming. So having done that, and the company were having gone back, they came back to give us a guarantee that that is what will happen if we give them the rights to which they are. So I went and I briefed the minister to say, look, it's not yet done. We have not signed on dotted lines, but we stand a great chance of getting Beyonce for free. And the minister, when he was being asked on Kaya FM, nicely on a Thursday, so minister, what's up with the awards this year? Are we going to see bigger and better awards? And then the minister spoke, yes, it's going to be razzmatazz and all the works and this. And then they said, who's the new headline act? And then the minister said, Beyonce. and then there was a brouhaha around the matter, and the city press wrote an article on the same matter. And having wrote, there was social media people were saying, because the city press article sensationalized the matter. They did not call us. They did not bother to get comment from us or information from us. They wrote, and they said in what they wrote, that judging by how much Beyonce costs and judging by how much Beyonce was paid for a private function by Hannibal Gaddafi, the son of the late Gaddafi, he is also late, the late Hannibal Gaddafi, they said in rent terms it will cost 17 million. And then they attributed that to what we are likely to pay Beyonce. But they didn't know the facts, and they didn't bother to check the facts with us. And then social media went uproar that we are willing to spend 17 million. It didn't matter how much we clarified this issue. I mean, I hardly ever speak to the media, but on that occasion I spoke, because when they said what they are saying, it isn't really a reflection on the minister. It is a reflection on me, the accounting office, that I am willing to spend public funds in that manner. And I took offense, honestly, because I felt that I'm nowhere near this thing, and this is not, it's a gross distortion of what we are trying to do. Added to that, we had a problem. The management of Beyonce, when they heard that there is reports of this in South Africa, they then wanted to sue, to say, no, we have not even signed, and yet, and they were threatening to pull out of the contract. I don't even know whether it's still going to proceed or not proceed, but they were threatening to pull out. We had to give them an apology to say no, and explain the circumstances as I've explained to you, to lay the matter to rest. So, as is, the minister came out openly, even at the launch of the awards, to say there will be no Beyonce, and we had cut out Beyonce. We would not have been that irresponsible to do such a thing, but we thought that if we could raise, consistent with our strategy of raising the public profile of the awards, we should have done that. So I think that's the story about Beyonce. In short, she's not coming, and she's not going to come. That's as simple as that, and I hope the committee understands the context and what really transpired and how the Beyonce matter
changed. I guess that Rabuta will explain it to the meeting. Rabuta is very articulate.
Well, Chairperson, it's important, you know, to be briefed on these issues, because if we are not briefed, will always be irrelevant.
Colleagues, I'm sure that Amaphosa Fanela has again.
Okay, the last issue, Chair, was the consultants and why is the thing so high. I think there that it's not just consultants. If you read the full title of the budget line item, it also includes agencies, which would include our transfers to Love Life and not Love Life, to Sports Trust and what, and which answers the question of the Sports Trust, are we giving them money or not? Yes, we are. And we did, and they did many of our projects last year, and they're still doing some this year. And even others, even Show Me Your Number is still part of what we give the money to. The vacant post, we have advertised now. I'm sure you have seen. We have advertised 2 weeks ago. I think the adverts closed yesterday. The 18th, yeah. Okay, they're closing the 18th, the advert. And so we have advertised, we are recruiting, we are filling the vacancies, because once we took a decision that restructuring under the current circumstances would no longer work, but we have to restructure the department, we have to review the structure, we did that. The disability target, yes, we'll reach more of it. Increasing the expenditure of travel and subsistence. Honorable Rabuta, we are busy now. Unlike, we are no longer that ministry and department that was very dormant, that didn't only went to shake hands at the stadium when the team is supposed to play, only when Bafana plays. It's no longer like that. We now go to schools, we go to rural areas, we even honor tournaments hosted by chiefs and what and so on. And it isn't just the minister and the deputy minister traveling, also the DG, senior managers, everybody. I told them, sport is not there in Pretoria, that building. It is on the ground with communities, and I want all of them to go. And I also want staff in club development to really go out and support clubs. They can't sit in Pretoria and say they are supporting clubs. They have to go out into the field. And so they've got extended periods working out in the field doing that, and that accounts for a significant increase in our budget around subsistence and so on. And you would see that we didn't really exceed the budget. We had anticipated that with moving towards expenditure around increasing our public profile, we have had to do that. So I think that is the issue that we are explaining of how we have arrived at this. The other last issue Honorable Changwa raised was the issue around promotions. Yes, we are the first ones to admit that there is no promotion, but I'm sure you'll appreciate that the PDMS system of government is a horrible system. As is, it's archaic and it's very subjective and doesn't offer any solutions. I've written again to my counterpart on this matter, and I was told that there is a committee appointed to review and overhaul the entire system. So it isn't our problem alone. I'm sure you're going to find it right across government. In fact, more than 80% of the queries and the labor disputes in the Public Service Commission are around PDMS. It's around promotions, bonuses, this, that, and so on. This is the key issue that is there. So it doesn't affect us alone. And yes, we have had no promotions. We are a very small department. Often for a person to rise, one must die. Or this chief directors you see, all of them report to Suma. We are the only department that has one DDG. You know, so for them to get promoted to become DDGs, I must either fire Suma or she must die or she must resign or something. But there's no growth prospects going up because we are so small. And then the issue of prayer, yes, what is remaining? We have gone to SCOPA, requested SCOPA to clear some of those things. As a counting office, I'm not entitled to remove from the annual financial statement a matter like fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Only SCOPA can condone that. But I can condone irregular as well as unauthorized expenditure. Where I have, you'll see in the annexures, I've already condoned. Where I found that the explanations were pretty straightforward, there's no need to charge anybody or what, I've done so. But where there is a case to be answered, I have to take action. And in other cases, I issued warnings, and when the warnings were not contested, I condoned, and like that. But the point is, those matters I can't remove willingly, that particularly that issue that remains outstanding. SCOPA must pronounce itself and say to us, it has now decided to condone. Only then can we remove the matter from our thing. Lastly, the issue of the education of athletes. We are piloting the Solitivi Liga Rugby Academy in Western Cape and Eastern Cape. And for the first time, we're insisting that the learners who go into Russian academy system must not just play these things, they must also study. And as a requisite of them gaining promotion, they must. There were talk at the Indaba about draconian measures such as outlawing children as early as 18 and below being contracted by teams and professional outlets. But the problem is that if you do that, other countries have not outlawed this. Those children are going to leave at 17 who are talented players of South Africa. They'll go to Australia, play there, and they'll be naturalized Australians and play for another country. So I think that is the problem we're having. The urban-rural divide, I think we are sitting at about 46% of 46 being rural and peri-urban, and the urban schools being about 54% of the schools registered on the schools portal. So that's that. Okay. I'm done, Chair. I think I've answered everything.
Yeah, I'm not going to assist
now. And now, thank you very much. I think it's very clear that you must interact with the Attorney General of Kansas. And then, for the last week, we had a very nice discussion. In fact, we have not raised any questions about how is it being managed. Private company, state thing, because I don't know if I think that about the general court. Therefore, this committee before the head of our court chair, or I think for general parliament chair, we should just put everything in order. Therefore, the members of parliament themselves, then the directors, for the first candidate, must be able to answer for some of this. But if we don't do that, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it for them. Thank you.
Yeah.